Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome to the program, everybody. It's good to have you listening in. It's Monday, May 17th, 2010. We say that at the top of every broadcast because so many are downloading and listening to this program over and over, passing it around, and we encourage you to do so. We are here producing this each week, each Monday at this same time to help as a free service to the industry, a public service, so to speak, to our industry, to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information on the hot topics, what's going on. And as we do each week, we start off at the top of the program with interest rates. But stay tuned, folks. We got Glenn Corso talking about Senate Bill 3217 a little bit later in the program. There have been huge, significant updates. But every week, Joe, nothing bigger than rates. What's going on today?
Well, this week may be an exception, Dave, because I think what Glenn's going to talk about is big. So I'm going to get through this as quick as we can. It's all good. As you know, rates are low. MBS prices good today are improving by about a quarter of a point. That doesn't mean rates are improving by a quarter of a point, but prices are. Most of that's a reaction to a weaker than expected New York State or New York Empire State Index, which is a measure of manufacturing activity up in New York, and that measure came in a good bit lower than what was expected, and as a result, mortgage-backed security prices rose on the weakness.
Interesting. Well, what happened last week? There was a fair amount of activity going on last week, Joe.
It really was, and it all seemed to revolve around Europe and Greece and the debt issues that we've talked about for so many weeks. Early in the week, in fact, Monday, first thing, we received news that the European Union and the IMF had dedicated $1 trillion worth of support to hopefully to appease the market and to assure them that that the issues that we were hearing about in Greece and other countries was not going to be a big issue. And on that news, the stock market rallied and MBS prices fell. Associated with that news, though, after it was first sort of seen and sifted through, the concerns kind of came up that this isn't really a money thing. I mean, surely dollars is enough money, but there are fundamental issues that need to be resolved, and the concerns about whether or not those countries and their leaders will have the political will to change what needs to be changed, and whether or not the social issues that will result are palatable. And so what was a very well-received news Monday morning kind of reversed itself, or part of it anyway, during the week. And later in the week, the stock market gave back some of its gain, and MBS prices improved. And actually, we got to the point where MBS prices or mortgage rates right now are as low as they've been all of 2010. So all that buildup we saw before the MBS purchase program ended in rates has reversed itself and then some.
And then what's going on this week, Joe?
This week we have inflation reports. We have PPI coming out tomorrow and CPI coming out on Wednesday. And, you know, the inflation's been tame, and we can expect, I expect the market's going to see and be comforted by continued tame inflation. Anything other than that would be a surprise and would reflect negatively on MBS prices and mortgage rates. Then always important, I'm sorry?
And we have PPI tomorrow, right?
PPI tomorrow, CPI on Wednesday. Fed meeting comes out, minutes comes out on Wednesday as well. That's always important. And then the last thing of much significance is the Philly Fed announcement to come out at 10 o'clock on Thursday. So it's not a other than CPI and PPI should be a fairly quiet week. The minutes will be important, but let's move on. Let's get to the more important thing.
Yeah, let's get to the big thing. But, you know, an important event that's happening this week in Texas down in San Antonio is the 94th annual Texas Mortgage Bankers Association in San Antonio. Many of us are going to be down there for that tomorrow, this afternoon and tomorrow, so we encourage you to show up there. Stay tuned. We've got an exciting jam-packed program. I tell you, there's not a time that's more critical that you be tuning in and getting accurate information of what's going on in the industry. One of our guests that we have coming up, Glenn Corso, is going to be covering a lot of it, and Alice and I and Joe, we just can't wait to get to it. So without further ado, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with you.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteland delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you back, folks. And I tell you, there's Alice, there's never been a more critical time than now to be staying up on what's going on in the legislative updates. Every week we bring a legislative traffic report because there's so much going down the freeway of legislation. Alice Alvey, the president of Mortgage U, is here to present this information. Alice, thank you so much. And I know there's a lot going on. Senate Bill 3217 is sure occupying our minds, thoughts and minds right now.
It sure is, and for a while there, you know, we felt like there's this big train coming down the track, and we're focused, making sure it goes down, and we picture you're coming up to a split in the track, and you're trying to push that lever and get it to go down a certain way with the risk retention going down the track, and no sooner through, you know, a lot of efforts does it, and Glenn Corso in particular, does it get going down that track, and you look up and there's another train right behind it, and that we didn't have a chance to try and catch and do anything with, so... The big news, you know, as I was conducting a seminar last week at the OMBA, the Ohio Mortgage Bankers Association, everybody's Bloomberg and, you know, Reuters news pieces are going off about this amendment. It's Amendment 3739 that was tacked on to the Senate Bill Restoring American Financial Stability Act that we've all been watching. And I want to give you some highlights of this amendment. So it came out quick and got passed quickly. It includes basically two parts. So part one is titled Prohibited Payments to Mortgage Originators. In that particular piece, it basically picks up what we've been talking about on previous shows, that in the Truth in Lending Act was the phrase to be that a loan officer could not directly or indirectly be compensated or varied compensation based on the terms of the loan. So they've pulled that wording out of Reg Z and they've put it in this bill. So that's the first part of it, that you could not be paid varying, loan officers could not have varied terms of payment based on the terms of the loan. Then it gets into this kind of this next section for any consumer credit transaction tied to real estate. The loan officer may not arrange for the consumer to finance through the rate any origination fee. And so you start to read that and you go, wait a minute, so I can't let the consumer finance points. Well, it gets into the howevers. There are exceptions to that. So generally, right, I know, I get so the howevers. So yes, you would be able to allow the consumer to finance the origination fee as long as the LO does not receive any other compensation, such as yield spread. So whereas what we're familiar with today, you can't charge discount and earned yield from a broker perspective, now it goes even further to say, for example, you couldn't have split points. You couldn't have, well, the customer wants to pay a little up front and then have some higher rate to earn the rest of the income in yield. It's It's an all or nothing now. And there are a few rules that go with this. So, yeah, so they would not be able to receive compensation in two places, so to speak, you know, front end and back end. No wholesaler can pay a yield spread if they see that origination and other points are being charged up front. There's an accountability there for wholesalers. And then it gets into then the third piece is that the consumer does not make any upfront payments of discount points or origination. So there's some challenges in that aspect. Then it gets into another piece about the how this is all constructed. And it's going to prohibit compensation for, and, you know, you kind of picture, okay, I've got this part here. I can't be paid in advance. But then it gets into these howevers again of if I'm going to end up with not meeting any one of those requirements, I'm going to have to verify income. I'm going to have to make sure I make sure that my customer qualifies. And I'm going to have to make sure I qualify them over a five-year period, the first 5 years of the loan. If I do all that, it's kind of a safe harbor. If I'm not going to meet those requirements for any reason, then it gets into more aspects of that in negative amortization, and I can't do not qualify in that, and then if I earn more than 5 points, I'm sorry, 3 points, my compensation cannot exceed 3 points, and I now won't be in this category of kind of like what we've been looking at as maybe a safe harbor. So I know it's right now we're going to have lots of conversation with Glenn about clarifying this, and I know the first time you hear it, it sounds a little bit confusing. So I want to make sure that that's clarify it going forward. Right? yeah. So in any case, yeah. So there's a if I qualify the borrower for the first 5 years, I'm good. But the minute I step out of that territory, or I should say I'm not in that territory, I'm not a safe harbor if I have negative amortization, a balloon, or I have more than 3 points. So that raises a lot of questions, and that's what we'll be talking about with Glenn Corso. So basically attempts to set some minimum standards for underwriting for basic qualifying, and that has a lot of detail as well, which I guess what I'll do is we'll save that for the next segment when we can all get into the detailed discussion. As a side note then, for FHA, it did officially go through the committee within the House, so we do have that the FHA Reform Act was passed by the House Financial Services Committee as a side note, and the other legislation at this point I think is a moot point.
I think all the other, In fact, I'd encourage anyone that is going to be wanting to get an update, and there are other things that are of significance moving through both HUD and on a rules basis, and we have other things going on through the Senate, but probably nothing. Everything's being overshadowed by the developments of 3217 and that whole discussion. So we're gonna take a quick break. We'll be right back. Alice, thank you so much for bringing this to us each and every week. Your diligence of you and your staff is so much appreciated. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back with Glenn Corso right after this break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin'.
Good to have you back, everybody. And this is a great moment to introduce our new sponsor, PMI. Glenn Corso was the former senior vice president and head of, I believe, investor relations. Glenn, you can correct me on that if I was correct. But with the PMI group, he's got 33 years of industry experience, and a good chunk of that was with PMI. So a special thank you to PMI and and specifically to Ralph Armenta for his contribution to get PMI to be one of our sponsors. We're thrilled to have literally hundreds of PMI employees listening to the program today across the country. Welcome, PMI, as a sponsor. It's a joy to have you here. We have a special guest again, Glenn Corso, formerly with PMI, now is the founder of the Community Mortgage Banking Project, which is an advocate
advocacy organization representing independent community and regionally based mortgage banking companies. And Glenn, a major kudos, congratulations go out to you for what appears to be a major victory and doing some things behind the scenes. And quite frankly, knowing you as well as I do, and you being the humble guy that you are, you're probably not going to try to take all the credit. But Glenn, you have a lot. We have a lot to say thank you to you for what developed last week. Welcome to the program. Give us an update, Glenn.
Well, Dave, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on the program. And I really appreciate all the kind words. But as you indicated, this was definitely a group effort on the part of the entire mortgage industry. We had the Mortgage Bankers Association, the Housing Policy Council, the Independent Bankers Association, even the credit unions and the community mortgage lenders all got into the act. So it was definitely a group effort on our part. But yeah, we're really pleased with the outcome, and it was unfortunately shadowed a bit by the Merkley-Klobuchar amendment that Alice was talking about a few minutes ago. But let me recap for you just very briefly the provisions of the Landrieu Hagen-Isaacson amendment. Senator Mary Landrieu from Louisiana proposed an amendment that basically exempted what we're calling qualified mortgages from the risk retention provisions in the bill. Now, this was something that we had been looking for quite a while, very concerned about this, because as originally written, the Senate bill said that any mortgage that was securitized, that the securitizer and the originator between them had to retain 5% of the risk on the mortgage that was in that security, and that meant each and every mortgage. And the regulators were given the ability to decide, okay, the securitizer is going to hold 2 of the 5%, and the originator has to hold the other 3%, or whatever decision they wanted to make in that regard. And of course, the independent mortgage bankers we work with were saying, oh my God, does this mean that if I make a $100,000 loan, that's $5,000 in additional capital I have to hold over and above the capital I have to hold for my FHA approval, my Fannie Mae approval, my Ginnie Mae approval, what have you. And the answer was yes. Yes, it would have been. So the amendment essentially says the regulators are directed to create an exempt category. The exempt category is going to be loans that are fully documented, where the borrower's income and assets are fully documented, where there's no negative amortization, no interest-only period. If it's an adjustable rate mortgage, that there's an appropriate cap in place for annual interest rate increases as well as interest rate increases over the life of the loan. And if the loan has a loan-to-value ratio in excess of 80%, that it has mortgage insurance on it. Can be FHA, VA, USDA guarantee, or of course private mortgage insurance, but it has to have mortgage insurance on it. So those are the basic provisions. In essence, Dave, what we were looking for is the loans that are being made today, that everybody knows the credit quality of the loans being made today is very, very good, and we're not
making any of the kind of hinky
products that we were originating just a few years ago. These loans can continue without risk retention. That was the whole purpose of the amendment. So we were really, really thrilled, and we got two Democrats, Senator Mary Landrieu and Senator Kay Hagan from North Carolina, to offer it, and then Senator Johnny Isaacson, a Republican from Georgia. And we were really thrilled that it was a bipartisan amendment.
And that was, and that, so that's important to bring out. It was bipartisanship support for this. That is so important. Alice, you've been tracking this. I know you have so much to ask Glenn, as with some of the other things that have developed here. So, Alice, invite you to jump in on this.
Well, I think the 5% risk retention, like we said, Glenn, congratulations. I like to think, too, that part of the, you know, getting the word out through the radio show helped. That was the big train I was referring to that got moved in the right direction. I have questions, you know, and I'm sure many people do, about this other amendment, the Merkley-Klobuchar amendment, and how this is going to affect the industry. How did this sneak by? And I understand it is just going to committee. Certainly between the Senate and the House bills, this type of thing can go away. But, you know, like I said, I'm sure listeners have more questions about that. You know, my thing is, what does it do to the lender to cap loan originator or to structure loan originator compensation this way, the way this bill has it laid out?
Well, Alice, essentially, I think you really put your finger on some of the key points when you gave your very good summary earlier in the program. What this amendment does is it takes the provisions that the Federal Reserve had proposed through Truth in Lending last fall, and it puts them into law with certain key changes. And the House bill has some similar but not identical provisions in it as well. Essentially, it's going to definitely would change the way loan officers get compensated right now, because under the Merkley-Klobuchar amendment, a loan officer, and for that matter a broker, can't be compensated based on the characteristics of the loan. So as I've had many of our independent mortgage banking members explain to me, they compensate their loan officers right now really based on the profitability of the loan that the loan officer puts together with the borrower. So that if there's certain characteristics of the loan, or the loan will command a higher price in the marketplace, et cetera, the loan officer captures part of that profit that the company is going to realize. That's not going to be possible now. Essentially, what you'll have to do is you can vary compensation based on loan amount, which is something that the Fed said they might consider but didn't promise to do in their proposed regulations. You can also pay volume bonuses. So if you have very productive loan originators, loan officers that you want to retain with a volume-based kind of compensation, you'll be able to do that as well. But the compensation plans that are in place right now that really vary according to the profitability of the loan are really going to have to be redone under these new rules. And since the House bill has some similar provisions on loan officer and broker comp, I'd say the odds of this getting changed so that it's more favorable to the industry are probably pretty slight. I think we're going to definitely see something there.
Oh, okay. You know, my question is, it makes the reference to indirectly. So would it even prohibit, in your eyes, I know, we're not attorneys here, but just the idea that if I had a compensation pool or a profitability pool that was all-inclusive of maybe a particular region of loan officers, and they got compensated out of that, would that be considered indirectly on the terms of the loan? So even that type of payment compensation structure would be prohibited?
You know, Alice, at the risk of I would say that if that pool that you mentioned is the amount of the pool is determined based on the characteristics of the loans, then I'd say that would be indirect and therefore prohibited.
Yeah, that was my guess too. Yeah. Well, I know, too, that they try and kind of put all these pieces together, and I think the challenge is going to be in wholesale. You know, essentially, now you've got to have people in advance of closing trying to enforce this because, like RESPA, any kind of trying to implement a regulation, you've got people trying to get used to things and transition. So they do appear to hold the wholesalers even somewhat accountable and watching for this, as you're not receiving yield as well as points up front. That's a new piece that I don't recall seeing in any of the other legislation.
Right, that's right. And so essentially for, I guess from the broker standpoint, they're really going to be faced, you used the phrase before, an all or nothing proposition, and that's essentially what you have here, because it looks like if you're going to have the borrower financing into the rate any origination fees except for third-party settlement fees that aren't retained by the lender, then the originator can't get compensated by the borrower in another way. In other words, if they're going to put it into the loan, it's all got to be in the loan, or they have to pay it cash out of pocket at closing, which, of course, is not a particularly popular option with borrowers.
Glenn, one of the things that, and I want to make sure Joe gets in here because he has a lot of listeners. I know that he's going to represent a lot of questions from his listener base or his customer base. We're getting some questions in from several that are from that work for banks and some larger financial institutions. They're saying, how does this affect us, or are we exempt being a banker? Would you speak to those that are out there that are inside, they're working for large regulatory regulated entities?
Right. So unlike the SAFE Act mortgage licensing provisions, which, as we all know, do not apply to employees of commercial banks or subsidiaries of commercial banks, these provisions that we're talking about here, they apply across the board to everyone.
Across the board. It's so important.
Across the board
so
to everyone.
That everyone understands that just because you're working at a bank and you're sitting there thinking, well, I'm safe. No, this is across the board, and I want to make sure you heard that straight from Glenn himself. It is so important to understand that.
They're transactional-based. This law is based on all real estate transactions, so it would even include HELOCs.
Yeah, it's really important.
That's right, Alice. Good point. Very good point.
Joe, I know you've got some listeners out there that have a lot of questions. Do you want to jump into the discussion with us, please?
Well, one of the exemptions I noticed was that that secondary marketing gains are not considered loan officer compensation. And you know, I wondered if with all the intraday market movement that we see, if for instance, somebody established a price at a time early in the day and prices improved throughout the day, might that market movement, intraday market movement, would that be prohibited? Or would that be considered like secondary marketing gains? Because you know, there are a lot of opportunities in that regard to either pass that on to a customer or to change the net profit on the loan.
Well, Joe, I'd want to go back and read it again with that in mind. But just off the top of my head, I don't think that there would be a problem in passing some of that gain on to the customer, what I think is going to be very restricted is that as many of the mortgage bankers that I worked with explained to me, they typically would allow their their loan officers to, in essence, give back to the borrower part of their compensation if they chose to do it, in order to make the loan. In other words, if mm-hmm. if they needed to discount off of the price in order to make the loan, then typically what they'd say is, well, guess what, Mr. Loan Officer, that's coming out of your end of the deal. And the loan officers would do that consciously if they had to maintain a relationship with the realtor who referred the client to them, or if they just, you know, wanted to make this loan because they had a volume total in mind or whatever the reason. Now, since it's going to be that would cause the compensation of the loan officer to vary according to the terms of the mortgage, that kind of loan officer, that kind of tie between passing a benefit on to the borrower and reducing the loan officer's comp in a corresponding amount, that won't be permitted.
That's
so
interesting.
That's a careful qualification of my answer. Yes, you can pass the benefit on, but it can't be at the expense of the loan officer.
So all the while, I'm thinking that this is a prohibition against paying a loan officer more, but what you're saying is it's also a prohibition against paying them less.
Exactly right. As a matter of fact, our group had formed a special task force. We hired an outside advisor, and we went and talked to the Fed staff about this, and we pointed this out to them. We said, look, everybody's focused like maniacs on, gee, the borrower's getting charged too much. Well, there's a lot of instances where borrowers come in and they drive a hard bargain or whatever, and they get a benefit, and the loan officer ends up taking a lower compensation. You're going to prevent those situations.
And they
really
and this is what resulted. I mean, that's
yeah. I mean, and since this amendment, as Alice pointed out, this amendment was filed on a Tuesday night and passed bright and early the next morning. We didn't have any opportunity to go talk to the two senators who are the authors and say, "Hey, do you realize what you're doing to your constituents?"
Wow. One other comment I wanted to ask real quick is that the compensation to an originator can be based on the amount, on the principal amount of the loan, and understand that might mean that you can pay a percentage of the loan amount, which is sort of standard. But does that also mean that if you had a $70,000 loan, you might be able to get a bigger percentage than if you had a $400,000 loan?
Yes, that's the way. That's definitely the way that I would read it. So, in other words, you can have a pricing schedule. Really, I'll give you an example. You can have a pricing schedule that says if a loan is from $1 up to $100,000, we'll pay X amount. From 101,000 up to the GSE limit could be another amount, and then you could pay an even different amount for jumbo loans. And as long as you're treating all loans in that kind of dollar band the same, and you're not varying it otherwise, then I think you could definitely put together a compensation plan like that.
And can I be the compliance lady tapping everybody on the shoulder that you have to remember, other rules that piggyback off of that if we end up with it, that you now have to be careful of FHA's tiered pricing rules, fair lending within each of those buckets. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do, is to come up with a pricing schedule by loan amount. That takes a lot of documentation and monitoring within a shop.
Right, and I think you'd have to be very careful to be able to demonstrate to any regulator that your pricing plan, your compensation plan, does not disadvantage the small balance loans.
Correct.
And you'd have to be able to say, look, this is so that our loan officers will be properly incentive to go through the work that they have to do on a $70,000 loan, which is just as much work as for a $250,000 loan.
That is just so interesting. It's so good to see that there's some balance seems to be coming back into this. Folks, stay tuned. We're going to be right back after this break for this continuing very important discussion.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
Whether you need a new warehouse line, or making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions,
or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you back. This is David Licken with Licken on Lending, where we try to bring you the most hot, important topics that are going on in the news. We want to be, our goal is to be your one-stop shop for what's important and going on. If you don't have time to read all the blogs and all the industry information that's out there, and there's wonderful resources out there, wish we all had time to read them all, but our goal is to bring you a digestion of that in a condensed format so you are on top of what's going on. Again, today we have as a guest Glenn Corso, who is the founder of the Community Mortgage Banking Project and has had a significant role in beginning to bring some common sense into Senate Bill 3217, which is the skin of the game, which was, you wouldn't say we're just dodging a bullet here. This feels like a nuclear bomb would have gone off. So I think we've dodged a major nuclear blaster to our industry. Is that a proper characterization, Glenn?
Oh, I think so, absolutely. We had we had told the mortgage bankers that we work with that what we would do as an organization is we weren't going to comment on every single thing that came up in the mortgage field, but what we would concentrate on is what we called the door closer issues. And so that definitely would have been a door closer. And Dave, one thing, let me just correct you. I am a co-founder of the Community Mortgage Banking Project. I'm going to have a couple of very unhappy partners unless I tell people that.
As I said that, I realized I should have included their name, their information up here. So if you had mentioned your co-founders, and would you tell the folks a little bit about what your mission is, and what is the mission and the reason that the Community Mortgage Banking Project exists, Glenn. I think this is important for people to realize and important for people to get on board with this. So mention two partners and give us a quick background of what you're all about.
Sure. So my two partners in this endeavor are Pete Mills, who for many years worked for Countrywide as head of their Washington office, and then a name that many of you may recognize, Bob Engelstad, who was for many years Senior VP of Risk Management for Fannie Mae. And before that, he worked for FHA. And really, what we were founded on is the idea of representing the views. We're a public policy organization that represents the views of independent mortgage banking companies. Most of our members, our 35 members, are not affiliated with banks, but we do have some members who are a subsidiary of a bank or a thrift. And essentially, we said that we were going to represent lenders who had full FHA approval and were either Fannie or Freddie approved as a seller and who operated as a mortgage banker. That is that they sell closed loans either directly to Fannie, Freddie, or put into Ginnie Mae securities, or they sell closed loans to larger lenders who then securitize those loans. So that's what we're in the business of doing.
Well, I tell you, folks, if you're looking for an advocacy group that's going to come in and support your best interest and do so in a way that where they're not having to fight all these conflicts, there's other trade associations, and they're all out there. Thank God we all came behind this and focused on this. But the other trade associations can find themselves in a situation where there's conflicting interests. And I'll tell you, this is one of the grassroots groups that you need to pay attention to, both Bob and Pete. I've met with Bob, Pete, and Glenn in their offices in Washington, D.C. Great folks, true professionals, and you will not at all be embarrassed about them representing you. They do so effectively, not just politically doing some things and taking PAC money. These guys really go at it at the grassroots level. I almost said something about the goose, but that's a whole other story. Anyway, we're glad to have you on the program. Let's dive back into this discussion. Alice, let's get into some of the nuances about some of these new amendments that we were talking about in the legislative update. Can we dive a little deeper into those issues?
Well, I think what the second part of this, we've touched a little bit on the loan officer compensation. Well, there's another part of this that gets into trying established minimum standards for residential mortgage loans. That was the second part of this. So, Glenn, what are your thoughts on how they've phrased the minimum underwriting requirements in a sense? They're saying some of it sounds pretty basic, verify income, verify obligations, debt-to-income ratio, make sure if the customer has two loans, you're using both of them. Some of them you go, oh, okay, I get the guidelines, I get why they're doing this. But then it starts to go off into a corner on, what's reasonable and presumption of ability to repay, which, I think starts to raise some confusion. So what are your thoughts on that aspect of this bill, or this amendment, I should say?
Well, Alice, I'd say there's two things there. Definitely the thing that you just raised with the determination of the ability to repay. I mean, on the one hand, of course, that's what underwriting is all about, isn't it? Making sure that you look at all the information on the borrower and you look at the value of the security property and you say, okay, I think if worse comes to worse, we can get repaid from the value of the security of the property, but the borrower, do they or do they not have the ability, and have they demonstrated in the past responsible use of credit so that you feel good that, yes, they're going to be able to perform on this loan absent some extraordinary circumstance arising, i.e. a lengthy job loss, a death or an illness or a divorce or, something that can disrupt the household. And if that's what they mean by determination of ability to repay, well, We're doing that right now, right? We should be doing that when we underwrite loans. But if they mean something more than that, and that's where you get a little uneasy, then it could be a whole different story. And that sort of ties to my second point, which is the key difference, Alice, between the House bill and the Senate bill in this regard, because the House bill has similar provisions, but the House bill leaves it to the banking regulators to devise these standards, whereas the Senate bill puts it with the new consumer regulator. And that's very troubling. You have a consumer regulator who's going to be passing on underwriting standards, where the underwriting standards are supposed to be the lender evaluating the borrower's ability to repay, and they're doing that so, number one, they can make sure that they'll get paid back the money. And, of course, that's a big investor protection, too, because ultimately these loans are going to end up with investors. I'm not sure that a consumer regulator really should be determining those underwriting standards. So that's very troubling and an issue we hope to address in the upcoming House Senate conference.
Well, and it makes reference to going out 5 years. Okay, that's easy on a fixed rate loan, but you know, when they say, you know, I'm assuming that's just referring to the term of the loan. We have no ability to say anybody's going to have a job tomorrow. You know, so from an underwriting, what I would consider a true risk analysis on credit, employment, assets, you know, appraised value, we have no control over that at any point into the future. So when they talk about this in this first 5 years, I'm assuming that's just related to the payment portion. So if you had an ARM, you'd make sure you did worst case scenario for the future payments. Is that your understanding as well?
That's my understanding as well. However, I would point out that there's another possible interpretation. I wouldn't consider it a reasonable one, but another possible interpretation would tie to the borrower's demonstrated employment stability. If you've had a borrower who has moved around a bit in their career and their career is a short one, then you could run into a problem where you could have a regulator come in and second guess and say, well, look, this person worked in this industry for 2 years, then they moved over to this other industry for 3 years. You really don't have a five-year record of stability. And then you're arguing, well, no, this is supposed to be tied to the loan. So I would say, Alice, I think your interpretation is the reasonable one, but it does trouble me that a regulator could turn that around a bit.
So that essentially would mean in an audit, then I not only have whoever I'm selling the loan to auditing to see if it's a potential repurchase because I didn't follow their guidelines, but I have some now, you know, the Consumer Financial Protection Agency or whatever name they end up with now coming in and auditing potentially even a performing loan and being critical.
Yes, that's exactly right, and of course that's something we're gonna try and work to prevent in the conference. But that could be one very unfortunate outcome, which we hope doesn't come to pass.
Well, you know, one thing I want to jump in here is we're getting some emails in right now as we're talking, Glenn, from folks saying one particular business owner here, a guy that owns his own independent mortgage banking company, says I fought several lawsuits recently. Is this opening the door for the plaintiff bar? And for those that don't know what the plaintiff bar, it's those attorneys that represent a group of people out there, consumers, and sue our industry, participants in our industry. This particular business owners want to know, Glenn, is this legislation, if it all passes as we're looking at this point with the amendments that are there, does it really open the door for an increased amount of lawsuits and class action suits? Is this going to open the door for more litigation?
You know, unfortunately, my answer has to be maybe. And it could very well open the door. To be honest, I haven't really read it that closely with that thought in mind, because typically these bills will contain something about whether or not there can be private party enforcement of these standards. And so I don't remember anything like that in the bill, but I can't tell you for sure that it's not in there.
Well, you've been so busy, Glenn, just trying to get in there and have an impact to get out
some of the negative negativity that was there, that nuclear bomb that was facing at, we were facing down here very shortly. And so, no, we understand that. And I think as this thing develops and we're getting questions and what are the next steps, we've got three emails that just rolled in, what are the next steps, where's this bill passed, when is it going to actually go and become a law? Give us an idea of what the track is for 3217 along with amendments. Are there going to be more amendments coming in?
Yeah, the latest word we have is that the amendment process will continue for at least this week. And what we understand is that there is a possibility that either late this week or early next week that we may see a debate get cut off on the bill, that is, no more amendments, and that they actually may vote final passage of the bill. I know that the objective for the Senate leadership on the Democratic side is that this bill be all done with by Memorial Day. Now, I don't know that means they send the final legislation to the president for his signature or that's just the Senate finishing its work. I think they'd really like to definitely have the Senate finished with its work. I'm not sure we'll see a final bill by Memorial Day.
Well, I think we're all going to be back in New York next week. This week we're in Texas for the Texas Mortgage Bankers Association down in San Antonio, and next week we're going to be in New York. We're going to be, by the way, folks, doing a broadcast from the Secondary Marketing Conference, and it'll be for those of you that are attending. Find us. The plan at this point is to be in the Loan Sifter booth along with Ralph Armenta. We're going to be doing a live broadcast from there. We'll be thrilled to have you present your come on by and love to get your thoughts and your chance to walk up to the microphone and share your views of all that's going on in the industry. Glenn, stay tuned. We're going to continue the discussion. We'll be back after this brief word.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel Schrott can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel Schrott has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel Schrott can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel Schrott represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel Schrott today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel Schrott, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
I want to say thank you again to so many of you that are tuning in across the country and are sharing this program with many of your peers. It is so important that you get this word out. And Glenn, I want to jump right in. By the way, we have as our guest again, Glenn Corso with the Community Mortgage Banking Project. He is one of three, as we pointed out at the beginning of the last segment. He is one of three founders of this company that is probably one of the most important initiatives. And boy, I tell you, if you're not a part of this group, call them, go to their website. Glenn, what is your website again?
CommunityMortgageBankingProject.com.
Go there, get involved with what's going on through these folks. They know what they're doing. Glenn, let's talk a little bit about what can people do. How can they be staying up on the amendments that are being proposed? And are you posting this on your website? And how can people stay what's going on as far as other potential toxic amendments being posed this week?
Well, I guess toxic depends on your point of view. But
that's true. I think it's the fear of the toxic, is the fear of what might be out there lingering. We hope there's some more positive ones out there, but it's the fear of those toxic ones, Glenn.
Yeah. So I think that the best way to try and keep up on that is there's a couple of different websites, both for the Senate and then for the Senate Banking Committee, that will let you know about the amendments that are being posted. But Dave, to tell you the truth, I think for the most part, my sense is that they have moved on to, in their work to other sections of the bill. So I do not believe that we're going to be seeing any more amendments to the sections that are most important to our industry. They're really looking at other sections that that do not deal specifically with mortgage lending. So hopefully we've seen the last of the unpleasant surprises with the Merkley-Klobuchar amendment.
Well, let's give us some ideas. Should we be? Is it better at this point to let sleeping dogs lie, so to speak? Not that our senators are sleeping dogs, but I mean, should we just? What is the best strategy for our listeners to take at this point with at this stage in this critical piece of legislation?
Well, I think that if your listeners believe, as we do, that the Landrieu Hagen-Isaacson amendment on risk retention was good, they should thank their senators for their support there,
yes.
Number one. And then number two, they should point out the shortcomings of the Merkley-Klobuchar amendment and urge that those be addressed either on the Senate floor or in the conference committee. I think that would be a very good, very timely thing to do. So they can communicate via email with their senators and tell them both of those messages.
I tell you, it is so important, listeners, that you are involved. It's not just calling up and jumping up and down when the threat of this was so ominous, as it was out there for a period of time, but it's like Gillian's point. Get on the phone and say thank you for saving our industry. Thank you for saving what I think, quite frankly, could have been a torpedo to the middle of the economy. You take out the independent mortgage banking community and so many of the independent mortgage bankers, it would have had a huge impact on the economy and the recovery that we're so desperately wanting to believe is actually forming here. But that's a whole nother topic. Glenn, let's cover those critical points that they might want to be talking about on the amendment that is being discussed right now. If we could go through those real quickly. Alice, jump in there.
Well, I think Dave, the important thing to remember is this. Many senators, whether you like to admit it or not, many senators really look at the mortgage industry as having created a lot of the economic problems that we've had over the past several years. And so the mortgage industry per se is not held in very high regard up on the Hill. And so to say, gee, this is going to hurt the mortgage industry or this is going to do that to the mortgage industry doesn't get you very far. You really need to address it from the borrower's standpoint. Talk about, number one, always mention to them, I am located in such and such state. I have helped X number of borrowers over the past year become homeowners or refinance their existing mortgage. I'm very proud of the work that I do in that regard. I really try always to have a situation where I make a loan, originate a loan where it serves the borrower well, and of course it allows my company to make a reasonable profit, because we're in business to do that. And then go on to say, here's why I think that the Merkley-Klobuchar amendment is going to cause problems for the borrowers that I'm seeking to serve in order to allow them to buy a home. And I think the big one was something I pointed out when Joe and I were talking before, which is that Merkley-Klobuchar is going to prevent you from a very common situation where a loan officer today can give up a part of their compensation in order to benefit the borrower because, they want to close this loan. They want to, for whatever reason, they want to close this loan. It's a benefit to the borrower that they give up part of their compensation. And it's, in essence, a very basic way that mortgage companies operate. And this is a benefit to the borrower that will go away if Merkley-Klobuchar gets enacted without any change.
And the other one in there is the restructuring piece, or in that financing, is the idea that you're taking away options for consumers who may want to pay some of the origination costs up front and only roll in some of them into the interest rate.
Oh, yes, Alice, thank you for mentioning that. That's another key thing. That, as you know, is very, very common today, that borrowers choose to finance part of their fees and points and to pay part of them in cash. That option goes out the window.
It's so important that we stay on top of these issues. Glenn, I want to say thank you so much. We'd like to have you back and schedule to have you back on the program on the 31st. Well, I guess that we're going to be, if that is, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that is Memorial Day. So
that is.
That it'll be a program. It'll be either that day. Stay tuned, folks. We'll let you know. If you send us your email, we'll tell you when Glenn will be back on either the 31st or would you be available on the 5th, Glenn. We'll talk to you about that after the program to have you back as soon as this is resolved. And I want to say thank you again for being on the program. Again, we are here to bring you up-to-date information. And by the way, Glenn, if you could stay tuned, emails are still rolling in, and right up to the last minute, we're going to try to answer some of the questions. But we're here, folks, to help you digest many of the issues that are going on out there and, quite frankly, help your business grow and operate on a stable platform. And we have started an accounting corner. We're going to call it the accounting update, whatever it is. We're coming up with an official name of it. But so many people, when we had Andy Schell on the last time, said, Dave, I would love to get little tips on how I could do my accounting better. So stay tuned. We want you to listen to this recorded message from Andy Schell about.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to be on the show again. This week's topic for the Accounting Corner is financial statements. Financial statements are like reading an x-ray. They show the interior of the business. And like an x-ray, there are some very important elements to understand in order to read them correctly. Now, standard financial statements include a balance sheet, an income statement, and a statement of cash flows. And then there are also important supplemental schedules. But the primary financial statements are established by generally accepted accounting principles, also known as GAAP. Accountants apply the principles of GAAP to express an opinion on a set of financial statements. Your books should follow GAAP, except for a few known deviations, to enhance the readability of the financial statements. At another time, we'll talk about the importance of these deviations from GAAP. But as I said, the three major financial statements are balance sheet, income statement, and statement of cash flows. A balance sheet is exactly what it says it is. A balance sheet should balance. Your assets and your liabilities plus your net worth should balance. Your assets are things that you own. Your liabilities are things that you owe. And the difference between assets and liabilities is your net worth. Net worth, or equity, also known as capital, is an essential measure of the book value of a business. So to be clear, a balance sheet is assets equal liabilities plus capital. Now, just a quick side note for mortgage banks. If you're closing loans for a borrower and the borrower has escrow impounds, that money that you collect at closing for the customer's impounds, that's not the mortgage company's money. That money has to be held separately in a separate bank account called escrow held for the benefit of others, and it must be recognized as a liability in your financial statements. If you are net funding escrows when you fund a loan, you could be violating HUD and agency regulations. Now, quickly through the next financial statements. The next financial statement is the income statement, which is also called the profit and loss statement. All the revenue for the month less all the expenses for the month, that generates net income. The net income for the month is then added to the net worth of the company, and that's called retained earnings. Accountants use accrual accounting to get income in the month that it's earned and expenses into the month when it's incurred. Earned and incurred can be different, but that's a topic for another time. A side note, it's after the 15th of the month. You should have your financials by now, and you should know the net profit for every single branch and the net profit for every originator. Now, the third report is called a statement of cash flows, which is not as popular as a balance sheet and a profit and loss statement, but it shows how all the cash into and out of the business relates to net income. And finally, the supplemental statements are important. These include your profit per loan reports. You should know your profit for each branch and each originator. And I don't mean just revenue per loan officer. I mean net income per loan officer, which is revenue less direct expenses like commission or lock extensions or even.
Well, everybody. It's so important. It is so important. We're running right up against the wire. Glenn, thank you so much for being here. The comments that are coming in, Glenn, are just saying thank you so much for being on the program. They love having you here. We're going to have you back as soon as we can, Glenn, to talk about this important issue. Andy, say Alvey, special thanks to him. We want to, for producing the program. We want a special thanks to PMI for becoming a sponsor and for many that are now tuning in from the world of PMI. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to the program each week. We look forward to having you back again next week on this important topic, and we'll be coming back and talking next week a bit about HUD and some of the important issues, and also bring you a live report from the convention of the National Secondary Marketing Conference. Folks, have a great day. We're wrapping it up for this day, and we'll have you and look forward to talking to you next week.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.